What is up, bosses? Before we start this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor. It is Fundrise. Now, in 2021, a truly diversified portfolio needs more than just the traditional mix of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. You need to be in private real estate, and that's where Fundrise comes in. In fact, Johnny, Sam, and myself have all personally invested in Fundrise even before they were a sponsor of Invest Like a Boss. So if you want to check out Fundrise for yourself, I'm going to tell you more during the break, but get a head start. Go to fundrise.com/likeaboss. That's FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss. Now, on to this week's episode.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
All right, welcome back to episode 186. Sitting here live in Kiev, Ukraine. Weird times. We all managed to meet up face to face. Derek, John, and myself in Kiev. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, considering we got a full practice run at this one. A little bit of tech issues. Yeah. So Johnny, Sam, and myself were all in the same room for the first time ever. We decided to record an episode, and all of a sudden, my program just crashed and I lost the entire file. And then I was like, oh, that's okay. We can save it. No, it turns out you can't. Thanks, Adobe Audition.
All this meanwhile, while Johnny's taking a nap and we're like 40 minutes into the recording and it crashed, I'm like, you know what? Let's go for dinner. We're not doing this over right now.
Oh, and speak of the devil, look who just showed up here.
So it was a good dinner. We had ribs, we had some beers, we had some nice ice cream after and a little nice walk. So
Johnny, go back to sleep. Stop crashing our episode.
Really quick, though, the reason we came here is because it was Johnny's birthday yesterday, and we had a really great day, and I'm going to let Johnny explain it. He also got a gift that relates to this episode, so I'll let him explain that.
Oh, yeah. Someone anonymously sent me like 0.0001 Bitcoin, which is worth like $3.30 right now, but I was tempted to spend that on the ice cream, but I've decided to hold it and
see. Anonymous birthday presents. Everyone loves those. So anyways, we are having a Invest Like a Boss meetup this week in Kiev. Johnny's just bought two properties. So we are actually setting up basically a real estate tour of Kiev and going onward to Odessa and Kharkiv, I believe is the name. So it should be cool. Now that the world's opening back up, we're going to try to get these Patreon iLab meetups going in different parts of the world, take a look at investment opportunities. But with this episode, we are going to be talking about cryptocurrencies again. So Derek's got a great guest on, and we're going to be talking about really just the industry of cryptocurrencies, but also their business, which is in the business of actually deploying crypto ATMs all across the US. I think they have 3,000 ATM machines, which is crazy. Derek, you have more on that?
Yeah, it's wild. So we're talking to Ben Weiss. He's the CEO of CoinFlip. And I want to do an episode that was a little bit different because we've done a couple Bitcoin episodes already. And everybody, when I ask, you know, what should we talk about, is always crypto, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin, and more Bitcoin. So obviously we can't do every episode about Bitcoin. But I want to touch on some of the other coins that are out there, because I think as much as we finally start to get somewhat of a grasp on Bitcoin, you know, 500 other coins have showed up since then. So maybe some ideas on what else is out there and if there's anything else worth looking into. And then obviously, you know, how this whole ATM system works, because I'm really fascinated with why you'd choose to buy Bitcoin at an ATM other than, you know, a Coinbase or any other kind of exchange. Sam, I think you have some experience with the ATM situation.
Yeah, let's talk about that on the outro. I'm also interested to hear Ben's feedback and views on why this is popular. Obviously, it is. They got 3,000 ATM machines deployed in just the U.S. But also on the outro, let's talk about, there's just a lot to catch up on with crypto. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the environmental stuff that's been of discussion lately. Touch on the U.S.'s hinted plans of a U.S. digital dollar. And I'm just interested in the kind of fundamentals and bit of the speculation that's going on with cryptos. So it'd be good to hear Ben's input, and then let's chat about it in the outro. So without further ado, let's hear it from Derek and Ben.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Fundrise. Now, in 2021, a truly diversified portfolio needs to include private real estate. That's where Fundrise comes in. Fundrise provides access to diversified portfolios of private real estate to all investors, whether you're accredited or not, with their industry-leading, easy-to-use platform. Whether you're looking to add some stable cash flow via dividends or you prefer long-term growth, Fundrise makes it easy as investing in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. Now, I personally use Fundrise as well. It's so easy. Every single week, I add to my account, and they send me updates about all these projects that they're in. Whether it's big or small, you get to find out about these deals, and it's really cool. It makes you feel a part of the process, yet you don't have to do any of the tough work. So it's like a win-win situation. So if you want to see for yourself how 150,000 investors have built a better portfolio with private real estate, it just takes a second to get started. Go to fundrise.com/likeaboss. That's fundrise.com/likeaboss. I'll spell it out for you. FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss. All right, our guest today on Invest Like a Boss, I'm talking to Ben Weiss. He's the CEO of CoinFlip. They got some really cool different ways to buy cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin out there. And he's going to talk to us about some of the other coins. We've done episodes on Bitcoin and everybody asked, let's do an episode on crypto. Let's do an episode on crypto. And we're just like, we don't want to do every episode on crypto, although it's the hottest thing out there. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on. And honestly, if you do every episode on crypto, you know, might be the move based on everything that's going on right now.
It's super exciting. It's the hottest space, but you know, we got to mix it up a little bit. And to be honest with you, we're usually preach pretty conservative investments. So I don't know that we want to put everything in crypto, but maybe you're the guy that tells us otherwise.
Oh, no, I will definitely not tell you to put everything in crypto, but I will tell you it is the most riskiest thing you can do is put zero in crypto. You should at least put something. It is more risky to not invest in crypto than to invest in crypto. And when I say invest in crypto, I mean put like 5% of what you can in. I'm not saying sell your house. I'm not saying sell your car. But like, you don't want to have zero exposure to crypto. What if Bitcoin's $1 million a coin and you get none of that?
That's, you know what? I'm really happy you said 5% because I think I'm exactly 5% of my portfolio in on the crypto space. So why don't we start out by just you telling us what got you into the crypto space? When did you start? What really interests you to make this your career?
So I love Bitcoin and I love blockchain. And there's a couple things that got me into crypto. Some of it not even related to technology, but have you ever read the book, The Black Swan?
I haven't.
Well, what it talks about is upside risk and downside risk. And just when I wasn't even a tech person when I first got into crypto, but what I saw was that asymmetric upside, sort of like how venture capitalists invest. You know, 9 of their investments could go to zero, but that one could go to the moon. And what I saw with Bitcoin was, who cares if my money goes to zero? That's why you put 5% of your money in Bitcoin, because who cares? Like, it would suck, but at the end of the day, who cares? It's not going to ruin your life. But if Bitcoin goes to 1 million a coin, or, you know, if you had Bitcoin in the beginning, went to 30,000 a coin, that's real money that you can make without much to lose. So at first I was just attracted because I thought it was an asymmetric bet. Like, you know, I have nothing to lose putting a couple $100 into this. If it goes up, a lot of return. But then I started studying the actual mechanics of it and I wanted to understand it. And the best way I thought of it and conceptualized it in the beginning was that it brings like private property to the digital space and to the internet. Like, if you have an MP3 file on your computer, you can, you know, someone can make 1 million copies of it and it can never have value. But with Bitcoin, with cryptocurrency, if I have a Bitcoin, you cannot have that same exact Bitcoin. And so it created digital property and scarcity on the internet. And now you have ways to create value from that. Bitcoin is obviously the most well-known example, but all it is it's like digital gold. There's only 21 million Bitcoins that will ever exist. But now what about with art? Now you don't have to worry about counterfeit stuff. So there's Bitcoin is just the beginning of that. And it's gonna make a whole marketplace on the internet for everything, because you can actually retain the property. A lot of influencers or content creators, like, there's always been this issue on how do you pay for content? Because once it's out on the internet, you know, people read it for free. So like these newspapers, they try to do like a subscription service, but what if,
oh, those drive me crazy.
What if you only want to read one article? So like, it's actually going to have a revolution for arts, for writing, for thing like that, because the writers are now going to be able to capture all that content. Whereas before there was like 15 middlemen, the publishers, the producers, the record companies, like, you know, the end stage of this is each person is going to be able to get the value that they make, whether it's content on the internet or a new protocol. So it's going to spur, you are going to see an age of innovation because people can actually get paid for what they do.
So that's interesting. But how do you explain that, you know, let's go back to 2017 when Bitcoin really blew up and that kind of put it into the mainstream for the first time. All these other coins came in and said, hey, we're just like Bitcoin too. We do this and we do that. Is what's to stop anyone from starting a new cryptocurrency?
Nothing. That's why you should be very, like, if a coin is 3 cents, it's probably 3 cents for a reason.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, after Bitcoin, after Ethereum, like, there are going to be other coins that really take off, but unless you are an expert, you really shouldn't predict. Like, you are not going to be able to predict which coins do. So a strategy that I've seen people do is, you know, hold the top 10 coins like a basket. Now there's funds like Bitwise 10. Of course, you're getting dinged 2+20, but then you don't have to manage the coins yourself. But as the time goes on, there'll be more and more solutions like that. Like, I know Bitcoin's going to succeed. It has succeeded already. I believe in Ether, and I know other coins are going to succeed, but even me, like, I don't, you know, think that I can predict which ones. So when that's the scenario, you know, stick to Bitcoin, stick to Ether, and then spread some money around. Maybe, you know, choose a couple ones that you think are cool projects or that you believe in, but there's thousands of coins and you probably have a day job. So you're not going to spend 100,000 hours researching each coin. So throw a little bit and maybe the top 10. But again, if a coin is 2 cents, it's probably 2 cents for a reason. Like, I see people be like, oh, this is going to be the next Bitcoin. Like, it's not going to be the next Bitcoin. Like, for something like that to work, network effects are super important. Even if something is a better technology than Bitcoin, Bitcoin already has so much steam. It's going to, like, it would have to be like 100 times better than Bitcoin to really take off.
Sure. So like I mentioned earlier, we've done a few episodes on Bitcoin. We're really excited about it. You know, I think a lot of people really do believe that there is something there. Why don't we talk about, you mentioned it a couple times already, Ethereum. You know, what's the case for that? And just because, you know, everyone hears the name Ethereum, it's probably the second most talked about behind Bitcoin. But a lot of people that maybe barely even understand Bitcoin now probably don't understand Ethereum. Can you just kind of understand, kind of go through how it differs from Bitcoin and its use? Especially, I know it's hot with the NFT market now too.
So even when you think you understand it, you never really understand it. So just always keep that in mind, that learning is a lifelong thing. But Ethereum is cooler than Bitcoin in the sense that you can really build on top of it. Like smart contracts, DeFi, all these things get built on top of the Ether protocol and the Ether blockchain. So like all those tokens, ERC-20 tokens, they are built on Ether. Like the way to think about Ether is like, it's almost like it's programmable. You can program anything on top of Ether, more or less. Bitcoin doesn't have the tech capabilities to do that. So basically, most of the cool projects are on Ether. One of the downsides, well, it's not a downside, they're really not competitors in my view. Bitcoin is like a harder money. Like Bitcoin, there's only 21 million. Ether does have some inflation over time. You know, Bitcoin's proof of work, Ether's not. So Bitcoin, like the way I would say it is like Bitcoin is the best, like by far, at one single thing, and that's being digital gold, being hard, hard, hard money. It is the best at it, and it is not that good at everything else. Like unless you're in Zimbabwe or a country that's really messed up, you are never going to use Bitcoin to buy Starbucks. It is an asset in the US. It is very good for security. It is very good for large settlements, international transactions, but the blockchain, like you are not going to use the Bitcoin blockchain to buy a $3 Starbucks. It, with its current tech, cannot process amount of transactions like Visa can. Now, Ether has a lot more upside in that, like, it's going to be used for smart contracts, DeFi, NFTs, all of those things. So it's like Bitcoin has one thing that it's already proved itself at amazingly. And like Bitcoin is here to stay. Ether has 5 to 10 different fields where there's tons of potential. But even though there's like the tech is amazing with NFTs and smart contracts and DeFi, and I do in my heart believe those are here to stay, like they haven't proved themselves and had to, and haven't lasted as long as Bitcoin. So like Ether has like a wider potential, but like it hasn't, you know, Bitcoin's proved itself at one thing incredibly well, where Ether has like 5 to 10 things it could be used for, but hasn't really 100% proved itself at scale in any one of those things.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. Thank you for that. Can we go over some, I think a couple other coins. I went through, you know, you had mentioned, you know, take a basket of the top 10 coins. I just picked a few out of the top 10. I feel like this one a couple years ago was maybe a better place to be in than it is now, but you can give me your opinion. What do you think about Litecoin?
So I do respect Litecoin, and I think like Litecoin's done some really cool things technologically that then Bitcoin has just sort of copied, which is great that like Litecoin did that. But like if Litecoin finds something that's like a very good tech upgrade, there's not anything really stopping Bitcoin from just doing that. So it's like a good experiment. Litecoin typically has been a little quicker. So maybe like Litecoin is used to buy coffees and Bitcoin is used as like your savings account. But I think sort of what turned a lot of people off to Litecoin is one of the founders and creators, Charlie Lee, like he sold a bunch of his own Litecoin. Like whenever an owner or founder sells, it's never a good sign.
Exactly.
So, you know, we sell Litecoin at the machines, but I think Litecoin sort of has lost a lot of its luster, but, you know, own a little bit of it. But, you know, it's like anything else. You just own a little bit, but I don't think Litecoin's not going to be Bitcoin. That's for sure. Like if there's only 21 million, how many people are there in the world? Like every rich person at some point is at least going to want, you know, one Bitcoin. So like just the pure scarcity of Bitcoin, like if like Bitcoin could be $1 million a coin, I can't tell you one, but like that's like very rational if you just look at supply and demand.
Sure.
Like, you know, and that's like what Bitcoin has that a lot of coins don't have.
And I think it being the higher price, it's almost become a status symbol for some people too, to say, hey, I have a Bitcoin.
Yeah. Like, hey, I have a full Bitcoin. But at the same time, you can buy $10 of Bitcoin. You can buy $20 of Bitcoin. So don't like, you know, don't get discouraged when you see the price and say, oh, I want to buy this other coin because Bitcoin's too expensive.
Sure, that's a good point. Now, it wouldn't be an episode if we didn't bring up the Dogecoin. Let's talk about Doge. Obviously, it was pretty much started as a joke, but you know, you can't take their market cap not seriously now. What are your thoughts on Doge? And even if it was started as a joke, is there some kind of fundamentals there that would make it investable?
Yes, and I think a lesson everyone should learn from Doge on a philosophical level is that whether it's money or even luxury goods, like let's think about money because that's the easiest example. Like money is worth something because people think it is worth something. And that is the same for the US dollar. That's the same for gold. Like people will say there's an intrinsic value of gold. Like, no, there's not. You know, maybe 5 to 10% of it is used in jewelry, but it's a rock. Like it's worth something because it's scarce. The dollar's worth something because people think it is. So like that just shows, you know, if people think Doge is worth something or anything is worth something, it makes it worth something. And if you look at like GameStop, like it's not worth based on the fundamentals what people would say it is, but if enough people think it is, and you know, even a stock can totally move based on like how we traditionally think of it. So I think we need to redefine what fundamentals mean. And if a really credible person like Elon Musk gets behind a coin. And I do think Doge was sort of a joke and sort of funny, but like there's another scenario where, you know, let's say someone who's incredibly serious scientist gets behind a coin and says, we're going to use this coin, you know, for all my science experiments. When we go to the moon, like that is something that should be watched. And I think it shows people like that every single currency and even a lot of luxury goods, like a really nice jacket from a certain brand, it doesn't cost that much to make, but people think it's worth that. So like perception is super important, not just in the markets for currency, but in the markets for good. Good. So while like, you know, Dogecoin, maybe you buy a little bit and like was started as a joke, do pay attention to think like to trends and to things that keep on, like have people backing it. And with the internet, understand that there can be collective action, you know, whether it's Reddit or whether it's Facebook, like what the internet does is make stuff scalable in the sense of collective action. So like while Doge probably is not a great investment from the fundamentals, you shouldn't just discount a coin because, you know, you think it has no intrinsic value.
I think that's a great point. We should be adding, you know, trendiness to as a fundamental factor, especially in today's market. You know, when you're talking, you know, your AMCs or your GameStop stocks, we're seeing it beyond cryptocurrency. So that's a really good point. Now,
everything, if you go to the, you know, go to a whatever bar and buy a bottle of Grey Goose and you'll pay $100. Go to the top club in the city, you'll pay $800. Like the perception does matter and it's in everything. And like, there's no reason stocks and money aren't going to follow that same thing.
That's a great point. So let's talk about what you see in the future for the entire crypto market. Basically, I wanted to touch on the fact that I think it was about a month ago, Bitcoin was recognized as an official currency in El Salvador. They're the first country that has done that in the world. Do you see that starting another trend where some of these more of these kind of, I guess, third world or developing nations, they don't have a reliable currency for themselves? Do you see that more taking on Bitcoin or maybe even another coin?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin is the best example. And I think you're going to start seeing it with the countries that sort of don't like, their currencies are already messed up or their populations are already underbanked. It sort of goes to like, the dollar works fine. Credit cards work fine to buy Starbucks in the US. You know, they might not in El Salvador or in Africa. So like, what do these countries have to lose? And the thing is like, they can, their central banks can say they're not going to print any more money, but no, like they can't credibly say that because of their track record. No one will believe them. So by tying their own hands, by adopting Bitcoin, no one believes a central bank, but you have to believe math and you have to believe cryptography. And I think you're going to see more and more countries adopt Bitcoin. I think it'll be good for international trade. And like, I'm an American, so I love that the dollar is the reserve currency. It allows the US to borrow and go in debt a lot more than it typically could. But like, if you really think of it from like a world perspective, like why does the US get to be the international reserve currency while all these other countries' currencies, you know, aren't, and they're at a disadvantage compared to, like, why isn't a neutral currency like Bitcoin?
Sure, that totally makes sense. Now, do you, obviously you're a champion of Bitcoin, it sounds like. Do you see any other coin potentially taking it over in the future? Because I know there's definitely some tech limitations and, you know, there's been some other factors.
I think we have to, it's too much older. Like, Bitcoin has already succeeded. It is the best returning asset in the last 10 years. Bitcoin doesn't have to be used at Starbucks to succeed. You know, Ether is used to program stuff on top of it, but you need the Ether to do that. So the Ether can still be valuable. So like, there's going to be multiple currencies for multiple different things. The US dollar doesn't even have to be hurt by Bitcoin necessarily for it to succeed. It could replace gold. It could replace real estate. I mean, it's not going to replace real estate or stocks, but if 20% of money that would have gone to stocks and real estate and gold goes to Bitcoin,
it's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And there's so much money floating around right now. I think what's going to be interesting is I'm trying to think how, like, there's some uses of the blockchain that might make sense, but then like a currency on top of it, like, you know, most blockchains, like, you need a currency or something to fuel it. And there might be cases where the blockchain makes sense, but like the way the currency is lined up doesn't make sense. Like, I think a lot of the newer things we still have to see if they're going to have the user, if they're going to be used like by retail people, like smart contracts, for instance. Like, on theory, they should be used for a lot of different things, but like, are they really going to replace the legal system in 5 or 10 years? or they only going to be used in like very niche stuff. And like being used in niche stuff, like might be worth a lot of money for that coin at the end of the day. So like, and even if the, like the US makes their own digital dollar, like that doesn't necessarily even have to compete with Bitcoin. So I think like, it's tough to say where it's going to all end up, but I mean, Bitcoin, Ether, crypto in general is here to stay. And I think it goes beyond so much more than investing and making money. It's going to redefine people's relationships with gatekeepers, with innovation. It's going to, like, you're going to be able to pay people direct. Like, what if to watch your interview, you know, people just automatically from their computer to your computer sent crypto? What about to control traffic flows? You know, self-driving cars go to an intersection, and based on like when people need to get where, they send a certain amount of coin to the intersection. That's how it controls traffic. Like, there's, it's going to be like literally change the world. It is going to change the world, and how it's going to change the individual's relationship to the government. It's going to change individuals' relationships to corporations. It is going to flatten a lot of the power structures in this country, in the world, where if you're not born to the right family, if you don't work for the right company, if you're not born in the right country, you're basically screwed. So nothing levels the playing field fully, but crypto is going to empower individuals. And I think that goes beyond just, if you don't want to invest directly in crypto, like look for things that are going to be impacted like by crypto, like, you know, art, real estate, creators, income share agreements where you can tokenize, like, you know, people will pay for someone's training in football. And then if they make it to the pros, they get 20% of their earnings. Like, it's going to totally redefine people's relationships. So like looking down the road in those areas too could be useful, even though that's like 5 years away, probably before it's actionable.
So I love all this stuff, but one question that comes to mind now that you're speaking all this is, obviously, you know, the US dollar is king, and the US government is going to do everything they can to hold that top spot. And you said, you know, maybe they'll come up with a digital currency, whatever that is. You know, knowing the way the government works, I wouldn't trust that would be a smooth process. So what kind of regulation do you see? I mean, we're seeing it in China a little bit now. I got to imagine...
We're regulated. Our ATMs are regulated, you know, at the federal level and then sometimes at the state level. And I think what you're going to see is more consumer protection, regulatory framework, but they're not going to ban Bitcoin. You know, they understand that, like, they don't want China to be the place where all the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is. And that's the great thing about, like, what El Salvador did. Like, you know, if El Salvador adopts Bitcoin, the US doesn't care. But like, right, if China or Japan or some of those other countries, it makes, the thing about Bitcoin is the government has more competition now. Same with blockchains and a bunch of other stuff too. And it keeps the government honest and like makes, you know, gives them more of a reason not to govern badly or inflate the currency.
Okay. So one other concern I guess I would have, just because, you know, everyone takes everything that Elon Musk says as the truest spoken word there is, and he can send a tweet and drive markets, you know, either up or down, depending on what he says. So back last year, you know, he had mentioned that that Tesla was holding a lot of Bitcoin and they would accept Bitcoin for their cars. And then all of a sudden he did a 180 and said, oh, just kidding, we're not going to take Bitcoin because I found out how much energy it takes, which, you know, I like Elon Musk. I'm a critic of some of the things he says. You know, you can't act like you didn't know how much energy it took before that, but things like that, is this energy consumption that mining takes, you know, affecting climate change? Because obviously Elon Musk runs an electric car company that is supposedly fighting climate change, but at the same time, you know, he wants to move into a cryptocurrency. And not just Elon, it's just, it does take a lot of energy in general. What kind of concerns do you see with the amount of energy it takes to mine Bitcoin?
That argument is overstated. It doesn't take that much energy as they say. A lot of the mining, especially in China and Washington State, is done with hydropower. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, like, you know, one carbon emission is still too much. That's why we plant, you know, a couple of trees for every ATM that goes out. Not that that's going to reverse, you know, all the effects of climate change, but I think the way we get out of, if you've actually looked at throughout history of how we've made stuff more energy efficient, like look at the cars in the 70s and then look at the cars today. Like, while they still pollute, they pollute way less. So you're never gonna, like, the way to make cleaner energy and the way you get out of the climate process is you have to innovate. You have to innovate and you have to innovate and you have to get the energy cleaner and cleaner. Turning off our phones because they emit carbon dioxide, not driving cars, like, that's not a sustainable solution. And if you reduce economic output, you're going to have less resources to upgrade the tech. So I think what you've seen in every single industry, like, look how much smaller and more efficient computers got. Like, the way to get through that is growth. And I think you already see it in a lot of the Bitcoin mining stuff, using solar energy, using things like that. And, like, if you look at some of the studies on climate change, it's already almost like, even if we stopped polluting anything today, regardless of crypto, no crypto, like, a lot of the damage has been done. And the only way out of it is sort of through it by, like, you know, we're not going to turn off our cars. Why can't we have cars? Why can't every car be a Tesla? Or, you know, that's the way we do this. Why can't every Bitcoin mine be solar energy? Why can't every Bitcoin mining be done by hydropower? Why can't there, you know, be stuff like that? And we see it already, but that's, like, the only way to really fight climate change in the long term. Like, people carpooling a little bit isn't going to get it done. Enough damage has been done. You have to totally upgrade the tech. I think that's the only way out of it.
Yeah, I agree. It's all about innovation. And I was just in Las Vegas yesterday. It was 118 degrees. So I am all for figuring this out.
I was there for the weekend for the Chainsmokers concert.
So, oh, nice. Okay. Yep. It was hot. And and innovation is the only way. And that's how, you know, and through innovation is profit. So there's definitely incentive for these companies to figure this out.
Let's say, like, you know, and maybe there is still a role for the government. Like, and I know they do subsidies and stuff, like, that's how Tesla makes most of their money from credits. But, like, no, let's make it profitable to fight climate change. Let's make companies think longer term. Like, there's a role for the government, but it shouldn't be, you know, turn off your company. It should be, we're going to decide as a society to reward companies or do some sort of, you know, incentives to make companies think long term and really price in those externalities.
Yeah, definitely. So before we get out of here, I just want to touch on some other coins that maybe you see out there that, you know, maybe necessarily not even are the best investment yet or haven't had the best return yet. Is there any kind of new technology in any of these coins that you really find interesting that could potentially, you know, maybe even benefit Bitcoin down the road, but anything new out there that kind of really jumps out at you as different and more innovative, I guess?
I guess just in general, DeFi, Polkadot, Sushi, some of those other coins, AAVE, I don't even know how to pronounce it, but, like, what I'm really looking at in DeFi is, you know, Bitcoin is cool, but there's going to be a whole parallel financial system. Like, think about lending. Like, you know, someone has crypto, they don't want to sell capital gain, loan against it, yield farming, all these things. Like, I was thinking about how in the developing world, like in Africa, there's a big credit crunch, like no one will lend money. So with some of these coins, you know, that people have micro lending against those coins and things like that. So what I'm looking at is all, like, think about everything banks do. And, like, people hate banks, but, you know, they lend money, they create credit. You don't want to keep all the money under your bed. And now all those things that banks successfully do and that the financial system does should be able to happen in the crypto space. They should be able to happen more efficiently, and they should be able to happen without, you know, a big corporation overseeing it. So in general, that's where I'm looking at a lot of the innovation. And then just in general, like, even with Bitcoin, there's still, like, the tech always is in front of, like, the user interfaces. So, like, you know, I'm looking, like, you're starting to see funds like Bitwise 10, but only accredited investors can invest in that. Like, you know, I'm looking for where the average person can buy $100 in a basket of 10 coins that auto rebalances every month. Like, that's what I'd be looking at.
That's really cool. And I've said it a million times on the show that anytime we have something that really excites us, an investment, it's always accredited only. And our listeners are like, I love this and I can't get into it. And I think that's where, you know, these crypto spaces are really cool because, like you said, you can buy
equity and inclusion and social justice and all these things. The Securities Act was written in 1933. You know, right. Poor people can buy lottery tickets. They can go to casinos. They can do all these things. But then, you know, by the time a stock is public, like, guess what? A lot of the money's already been made. Like, deals get sourced to me and other people in the tech space that the public won't even see for 3 or 4 years. Like, why do we get a head start to invest in those? And then maybe there's something that can be done with tokenizing, you know, like a lot of these deals will have like 100K minimums. What if we can tokenize that so people can put in like 10, you know, $10 or $20. So if we want to talk about equity, I think the securities laws in these countries need to make it easier for, you know, the non-wealthy to invest in companies. And there, or, you know, maybe there's a test people could take to show their knowledge where they don't have to have $1 million net worth.
I'm 100% on board with this idea, and I totally agree with you, Ben. We could talk about that for hours, I think, but we gotta cut it short here at some point. But before we get out of here, I want to give you a chance to, you know, talk about CoinFlip and what you guys do over there. It's at coinflip.tech if you want to check out more. Can you just give us a basis on CoinFlip and your ATM network, and what's the advantage to doing that than just going on an exchange and buying some Bitcoin or whatever it may be?
At CoinFlip, we operate just under 3,000 ATMs in the U.S., and, you know, Cash App, Coinbase, Robinhood, those are all great places to buy crypto. And, you know, all boats sort of rise together. But at CoinFlip, we accept physical cash where you can buy Bitcoin. If you have $50, $100, you know, in cash, or if you don't want to go to, you know, you want to buy a couple $100 and you don't want to set up your bank account, go to the bank, do all that stuff to buy a couple $100. You could buy cryptocurrency at all our ATMs. You can get it under 10 minutes. My Twitter and Instagram, if anyone ever wants to reach out to me, has been CoinFlip. But regardless whether you to use Coinbase or CoinFlip or Robinhood, I think everyone should own a little crypto. And even regardless of crypto, like, the dollar is inflating. I don't care what anyone says. Go to the grocery store, fill up your car with gas. You need to hold assets, stocks, real estate, crypto. Do not hold more cash then you need to, because you are losing purchasing power every day.
Awesome. So don't put that cash in a slot machine. Put it in a CoinFlip ATM. Once again, you can check out coinflip.tech. Ben is on Twitter and Instagram at BenCoinFlip. Ben, thank you so much for your time and being on Invest Like a Boss.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Derek, so let's jump into, I want to hear what your allocation is to crypto right now, because Ben was talking about this magic number of 5%. I know that's just kind of a general benchmark. It's obviously a very personalized allocation depending on where you're at and what your goals are. But where does 5% sit with you?
So I was really relieved when I asked him, you know, how much should you allocate to crypto? And it was really interesting that he said, you know, don't be 100% in, but you'd be a fool to be 0% in. So when he threw out that 5% number, it was kind of funny, because I'm literally within a few dollars or whatever it may be, 5% of my net worth is in some kind of cryptocurrency. So it was kind of crazy that he threw that out there. So it made me happy that this guy who knows a lot more about cryptocurrency than me suggested that number, and I was right at that number.
Well, and you know, we know lots of people that are basically 100% in cryptos, right? Or they made their money in crypto and now they're coming to the podcast to learn how to diversify.
Right.
So the 5%, you could be 1%, you could be no percent, you could be 100%. It runs the gamut. But I think depending on where you're at, and what your goals are for building wealth versus protecting your wealth, you're probably going to be at different levels. But Ben also said that you can't afford not to be in crypto. That is going to be a very debated topic. A lot of people are making their first sizable wealth off of crypto, but there's also a lot of people that have lost their shirts and totally wiped out with crypto. Even if they haven't lost an actual appreciation or depreciation, a lot of people have just lost it. Like, purely lost their keys and don't have access to their crypto. So there is a lot of risk, not just upside, but there is a lot of downside risk. You got to be careful of this stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. The security factor is definitely interesting. I mean, there was a story not so long ago. The guy had like $200 million in Bitcoin and he had like one last chance to put his password in or it was all gone. So I mean, I don't want to be in that situation. I actually have mine between two different exchanges, so I don't have everything in one place, because, you know, even your story about Mt. Gox and what you've gone through kind of scared me a little bit. So I want to separate it a little bit. But personally, I feel like I'm kind of following what he was doing before I talked to him. So my biggest holdings in crypto are in Bitcoin and Ether. And then I own some, and then a little bit smaller amounts, in, pretty much equally between Litecoin, Polygon, which is kind of like, you know, a shot in the dark one, and Dogecoin, just for fun, because I fell into the hype. What do you own, Sam?
No, I mean, I'm still holding Bitcoin. I think you sound like you've been trading it quite a bit in each individual coin. I've never traded it per se. I've just bought it and hold it. The only thing I've done is sell some of my allocation over the last, whatever, almost 10 years, man. 10
wow,
years.
Yeah.
10 so, years I've been in Bitcoin.
I guess I don't really trade the Ether, the Bitcoin, but I do the smaller coins. The Dogecoin, I've traded in and out of it a couple of times because it's so wild. So you might as well just, you know, take that profit and let it ride. So it's basically free money, or free coins, I guess I should say. I should mention that I stupidly, well, now it looks stupid looking back on it, sold all my crypto back in October of 2020, and just weeks before the huge run up. So well, don't so listen far, to me no- is what I should say.
Yeah, so far nobody, I mean, I don't think anybody has done 100% perfect in the crypto space, right? Like, I think the only person that's done crypto 100% well is Satoshi, who invented it and still has like a million Bitcoins, right? And seems to be holding forever.
I just need Elon Musk to call me before he tweets, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. If we all had an in loop to that, man. But at the end of the day, this is all speculation, but that's okay, because most investing is speculation to a degree or not, right? It's just that a lot of investments that we talk about, like property and stocks and bonds and things like this, there are historical fundamentals that suggest what way the price is going to move, which way supply and demand are going to move. When it comes to cryptocurrencies, we're just speculating that the people down the, there's going to be more demand down the road at a higher price, right? The fundamental, and it's a good point that he brings up about fundamentals, because what are fundamentals, right? The business makes profit, or we think that more people are going to want to buy this piece of art in the future, or this vintage of wine, or whatever. Like, but it's all just speculation that there's going to be more demand down the road at a higher price.
I like his analogy of, like, you, let's say you buy a bottle of Grey Goose at a club, you know, it could be $100 mm-hmm. in the liquor store, but you go to the bar and it's $1,000. So you're buying the same product, but there's that perceived demand that you have to have that product, or that hot, that sweater that's made by the designer, when you could have the same sweater for $10 at another store. So it's the perceived value of what this is. There may not be any fundamental base behind it, but it's perceived that this is popular. This is going
right.
to, this has a higher value.
Well, and really what the fundamentals could just be shifting over time, right? Like Bitcoin is basically valued at, because of its network effect and how much infrastructure is built up to support it and how many people have wallets. And so, yes, there's this perceived value but over time, fundamentals could look different and things that are valued could look different. But I think for sure cryptocurrencies are here to stay. As we're seeing now, there's going to be a long tail in the value proposition in the dollar, the dollar value. And speaking of dollars, the US keeps handing out a digital dollar. I just don't even know what to think about this, because the US dollar already is a digital dollar.
It's right? all this stimulus money we've been pumping in, you know, they're not working overtime at the factory, you know.
No, the printing presses aren't printing, right? It's just it's a mouse click stroke on your Mac computer, and it's all right, 6 trillion more. But I think it's something like 2% or something very small, minuscule, of the US money supply is actually available in cash, in printed notes or coins or whatever. The rest is just digital, right? So it's already a digital currency. only thing I can think of with this digital dollar is that they're just going to basically try to wipe out cash. Everything will be a little bit more traceable. There'll be more monitoring over you know, all flows of kind of this quote unquote digital cash, and they'll spin it as a way to try to rebuild faith and confidence back in the US dollar, because they don't want to lose, they don't want the dollar to use its place as the major reserve currency. It would be way too catastrophic to the actual dollar and inflation.
Totally. I mean, I think I see the US government doing everything they can to save that top spot, but at the same time, I'm a little worried that there's going to be some kind of regulation on Bitcoin too. And that's the easiest way for them to kill this thing. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think, what could they do? I mean, they can,
I guess they could go the China route and ban the mining side, but that just seems, I don't know. It's just,
you never know who's behind Bitcoin, right? You never know who actually has big stakes in Bitcoin. China could be banning mining because they want to mine it all at a governmental level. You know, you got to believe that some of the very rich and powerful people in the world are not fully vested in the US dollar, right? I'm sure a lot of people are taking out big chunks in Bitcoin right now, and they're going to do things in their power to make sure that Bitcoin's not squashed. So you don't really know who's behind Bitcoin and who all the stakeholders are. You know, the US could, they could make it illegal to trade within US borders or something. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to project this stuff, but the US did back in, what was it, like the 30s, make gold illegal and confiscated everyone's gold. So this stuff has happened before and it could happen again.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess Ben explained it best. He said people are using Bitcoin as digital gold. So I think you own physical gold, Sam. And do you see this as an equivalent investment? Or, I mean, the use case for it to me is you don't have to carry around gold if it's equivalent to it. So that's very attractive, I think, to a lot of people. But at the same time, it's probably easier to lose too. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm starting to view Bitcoin much more as digital gold, but this is all happening so fast, right? Gold's got 10,000 years of history.
Sure.
So that's what people are relying on. There's a historical fundamental and there's a belief that has intrinsic value because it can be, worst case scenario, you could always melt it down and put it into a watch, or it's used in some electronics. But, you know, gold is not easy to move around, right? So you keep it at home, you keep it in a lockbox in case like an Armageddon type of scenario. But like you said, taking $100,000 of gold across a border, it's like a baseball in your pocket, whereas Bitcoin, you just put it in your head. And it's so easy to transfer, right? So yeah, that's how I'm viewing it. The last episode we did on Bitcoin really helped kind of shape that viewpoint for me, where I see it as sort of a savings account. But am I buying more gold or more Bitcoin? I'm not buying either now, but I would say Bitcoin's probably got a higher upside in the future.
Yeah. And if you want to check out that episode, the last episode we did on Bitcoin is episode 167. I was with Stephen Lovera. Sam did a really good interview with that. So check that out. iLab 167. Kind of on a similar path, you mentioned Armageddon. So before I flew to the Ukraine, I was in Las Vegas. It was 118 degrees. It was some of the probably the hottest weather I've ever been in. It was 130 in Death Valley the other day. And then we get here to Ukraine and they go, it's never this hot ever. So
it's hot here.
Yeah. And so that brings me to the environmental factor of just mining this stuff. So I think this climate change. I mean, a lot of people didn't believe in it. I think they got to be starting to change their minds, seeing how hot it is this year.
I don't know, man, if the world's got to get hotter or colder, I don't know. which direction do you want it to go?
I mean, I'll take the hot, but it's still weird.
Do you want an ice age or do you want a water world? I don't know.
All right, man, mine 50-50. Away. Never mind.
No, I'm glad. Listen, I'm glad this is a conversation now, right? And it probably wouldn't be as much of a conversation without Elon, but Elon also kind of like, you know, shit where he's eating as well. Sure. So he kind of like walked right into that one.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's a conversation because from a glance, it seems like a just a horrible use of energy. But I thought Ben's point was interesting. That's like, all right, it's not actually like we're driving petroleum-based cars to pull out these Bitcoin, right? Most of it's renewable, but the fact is like he said, like one, just any carbon emissions on mining this stuff is too many. So what's important now is it's a conversation. And I think what the world tends to do is you wait for crises and then you fix stuff, or there's got to be a major profit play, right? So you have to make incentive and profit part of it, but things kind of get to a bad point until everyone gets together and says, hey, we got to fix this shit, right? And I think that's what's happening right now with the climate. And I think people are in that same narrative starting to wake up a lot to what's up, like how is Bitcoin actually being mined, and like, and how can we do this in a more sustainable way? And hopefully there's a profit narrative to that too.
Yeah, I think there's always been that scare tactic of, you know, the world's going to end or this or that will happen. And then it turns out it doesn't happen and we find a solution for it. And we're going to figure it out. It's just this, like you said, this is moving so fast. Like no one could have predicted that something like this would have happened. It takes some time for people to figure it out, but I'm confident that we're going to figure it out. And hopefully by doing so, that's going to, the incentive for that is profit. So I think it'll get figured out.
That's all we can hope for in this world, right? We figure out our solutions. Not that people are like, oh, screw it, I'll be dead. Just the next generation will worry about it.
You know what? I think I think it's really coming to the attention of people felt that way maybe 10 years ago, but it's just with the whole sharing economy, everyone's sharing everything now. So it's kind of, everyone feels a little bit of a responsibility to do their part, I think.
I sure hope so. It's a... That's a lot of potential problems in the world, but no, it's all good. Cryptocurrencies here to stay. Are you investing more, Derek?
Yeah, I'm sticking to that 5% though. There's nothing that makes me want to, you know, bump up my percentages. So a little bit here and there, but you know, nothing crazy, but you do hope for that one that's just gonna kick, you know, kind of like the VC startup example that he gave, you know, one out of 10, it could go crazy and 9 could fail, but at the worst, you're out 5%.
I think if I was more starting out and trying to build wealth, I would be putting a lot of time into analyzing coins and trying to figure out, again, all speculation, right? But I'd be trying to figure out the one that Elon's going to tweet next
that's the thing. It's not even the fundamentals.
Catch that next buzz. Cause
yeah. You want to find out what's going to be hot and who's going to be talking about it. That's the thing, like the trend more.
Game to play. Yeah, I know a lot of people having fun out there.
So before we get out of here, let's talk about his business though, because this is really interesting to me. CoinFlip runs an ATM network. As far as I know, they're just in the United States. They could be other places now, but over 3,000 ATMs. I've seen these things in Los Angeles and it looks like a regular ATM. It just says buy Bitcoin here and you can buy other cryptos with it now too. So my question is, who does this appeal to? Because it's so easy for me just to have an app on my phone and buy some Bitcoin. Why would I drive to a store and throw a $20 bill in there?
Yeah, just think about it like this. There are a lot of people that want to change cash into Bitcoin and Bitcoin into cash. There's marketplaces where you can meet buyers and sellers on either side of that exchange. And I tried this when I was in the States.
Buy crypto?
Who either have crypto and want cash or have cash and want to turn it into crypto.
And you meet these people in person.
Yeah. Yeah. So I met someone just for the experience of it. And like we met at a McDonald's and we exchanged, like, I think I sold him $100 worth of Bitcoin and he brought like these like crumbled up.
This sounds super
like
shady.
Fives
Sam.
And tens. It was weird. It was weird. He was like a Russian guy. I mean, it was weird for sure. But that experience taught me a lot about it. And then I did similar in Hong Kong where like they had an ATM machine and I basically put a Bitcoin in the machine and the machine spit out Hong Kong dollar. I'm sure those are still, I mean, it sounds like it's the exact type of machine that CoinFlip has deployed across the US. And when I was there in Hong Kong doing it, there's like a line of 25 people behind me. So it was popular, but I think I always chalked it up to like, okay, back then when I did it, it was like 6 years ago, I thought, well, this is just because it's very difficult to buy crypto for the most part. But now there's all these exchanges, but if they got 3,000 machines deployed across the US, dude, that sounds like there is a lot of demand. And I'm very interested to know who that is. Is that like, you know, Granny and Papa that are like trying to figure out how to buy their first Bitcoin, or is there that much like people trying to move cash into crypto?
Yeah,
and
I
maybe
think you're
that's
onto
why
something.
The US
more
is finally trying to push the digital dollar because they're like, we got to stop this shit.
Right? I think it's more of those people that, you know, they have the the buried safe in the backyard, or it's in the mattress. And maybe this is perceived as, you know, if they are holding it like gold, you know, I don't want to say that Ben's business is doing anything under the table, but these people might be, maybe don't want the IRS to know about a certain amount of money. So is that a possibility?
It certainly could be. There's lots of people doing that in different areas, but I would just say be very careful, because the IRS is looking very heavily at crypto right now, and they're getting much smarter about it.
Yep.
So treat it just like any other asset or any other type of trade. Make sure you track everything and report your taxes on time, people.
Good advice. I agree with that. I think that's a good note to go out on. So coming up the next couple episodes, we're going to be doing some cool stuff here from Ukraine. It's really cool to be with the guys. We're going to do a real estate tour. We're going to check out all that. And it just occurred to us that we're at the end of a quarter. So we got a quarterly update due for Johnny and Sam and all kinds of other fun stuff. We'll definitely be filling everybody in. What else you got, Sam?
That's it, man. It's great to be out here. It was funny because Derek, Johnny, and I were all in the same place starting yesterday. And like we all looked at each other and we're kind of like, it wasn't that climatic because we're doing so much video and stuff together. But actually, none of us had ever met Derek in person. And I hadn't seen Johnny in like 2 years, just because of all this COVID stuff. Like, we forget. So it's like a time warp. So great to be back together and checking out a new city where Johnny's making some investments, and looking forward to the next couple of days here in Kiev with some of the Patreons that have come over to meet with us. We'll be doing a real estate tour. So it's cool. And hopefully we'll be doing a lot more of this as things continue to open up, because this has always been the goal and the agenda of the podcast, is to meet in cool places, meet with some locals that are doing well, and then also just look for interesting investing opportunities around the world.
Yeah, definitely. So check out the Boss Lounge. Go to investlikeaboss.com. Join the Boss Lounge. We'll put up a lot of content in there. And also Patreon. We got some awesome, really cool stuff I can't talk about yet, but we're going to announce it after Ukraine. We're going to keep everybody busy for the rest of the year. So it's going to be a really good rest of 2021. And we're just going to enjoy it here in Ukraine. So with that, we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.